Welcome to another deep dive. Today we'll be looking into Biblical Economics by Kent Hodge.
A fascinating book, yeah.
It definitely promises to challenge some conventional thinking about wealth and poverty. Maybe even make us rethink the Garden of Eden.
Well, right from the start, Hodge contrasts the biblical creation story with those old pagan myths.
Interesting.
Yeah. Most of those myths use the idea of scarcity to justify social hierarchies.
Yeah.
But the Genesis account is different. It emphasizes abundance and shared resources as the starting point. It's radical, makes you see the world differently.
So Hodge is setting up a different way to understand economics.
Absolutely.
One that kind of goes against our modern assumptions.
Exactly. And he takes this abundance idea even further with the concept of Sabbath.
Sabbath isn't
just about resting, right? It's about resisting that constant pressure to produce, to acquire more and more. A counter narrative, you could say, to that competitive individualistic mindset, the kind that dominates so many modern economies.
So Hodge is saying that even with all the abundance in the world, we need these kind of built-in systems to remind us to share, to care for others, to just be rather than always striving for more.
You got it. And he argues that this idea of a reset button, it's woven into the Old Testament with the Jubilee year.
Oh yeah, the Jubilee year. Can you remind me about that?
Every 50 years, all debts were forgiven. Ancestral lands were returned to their original families.
Mm-hmm.
It was this radical redistribution of wealth aimed at preventing long-term economic inequality.
Wow. Imagine that happening today.
Right. It would definitely shake things up.
So how does Hodge connect this ancient practice to, you know, modern economic realities? Is he suggesting we should implement a Jubilee year today, literally?
He doesn't prescribe a literal Jubilee year for modern times, but he uses it to highlight the principle of economic justice.
I see.
His argument is that we need systems in place that prevent wealth from becoming too concentrated in the hands of a few.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if our current economic systems actually have safeguards to ensure a fair shot for everyone.
That's the question Hodge wants us to wrestle with. Are our economic structures reflecting the values of abundance and shared resources? You know, like we see in that biblical creation account.
Fascinating. So we've got creation, Sabbath, Jubilee, all pretty radical ideas,
yeah.
Especially when you think about how they challenge our modern economic assumptions. What's next? Where does Hodge go from there?
Well, next, he shifts his focus to the Exodus story.
Ah, the Exodus.
Which he sees as a pivotal moment in the development of biblical economics.
Okay, yeah, I can see how a story about escaping slavery would have some economic implications.
Exactly. Hodge argues that the Exodus isn't just about physical liberation. It's about challenging any economic system that perpetuates injustice.
Right.
He sees the Israelites' liberation from Egypt as a model, in a way, for Christians to challenge systems that exploit and oppress.
Challenging injustice. That's a key theme here. But how does Hodge apply that to specific economic ideas, practices?
For example, he challenges some of the common interpretations of the Joseph story.
Okay, right.
People often point to Joseph's rise to power in Egypt as a model for economic success.
Yeah.
But Hodge says that's a misreading. He emphasizes that the real message is about using wealth to share, not to hoard.
That's a very interesting take, different from what we usually hear.
Yeah. To support his argument, Hodge points to specific examples from the Torah, like the prohibition against excessive interest on loans.
Ah, right. To prevent people from falling into those cycles of debt they can't escape.
Exactly. And then there's that mandate to return a poor man's cloak each night.
Yeah.
Seems small, but
it speaks volumes.
Exactly. About the Torah's concern for protecting the vulnerable from exploitation.
It's like those ancient laws were designed to create a safety net, in a way.
Yeah.
Making sure even the poorest members of society had their basic needs met.
Absolutely. And that concern for the vulnerable continues throughout the Bible. A lot of the book explores how Jesus challenged the economic norms of his time.
That's something I'm really curious about. How does Hodge connect Jesus' teachings to economics?
Well, Hodge argues that Jesus constantly challenged assumptions about who deserves wealth, who deserves poverty. He uses stories like the Good Samaritan, for instance, to illustrate the radical generosity that Jesus embodied.
The Good Samaritan, yeah. Classic story. But I've never thought about it through an economic lens. Yeah. How does Hodge make that connection?
Well, remember, the Samaritan doesn't just help the injured man. He pays for his lodging, promises to cover any additional expenses.
Right, right.
It's generosity that goes beyond just meeting immediate needs. It's about investing in the well-being of others.
That's a great point. It's like Hodge is saying true generosity isn't just about giving a handout. It's about empowering people to thrive.
Exactly. And he contrasts this with the story of the rich young ruler, the one who couldn't let go of his possessions. It's a cautionary tale about clinging to wealth. For Hodge, these stories are direct challenges to the idea that wealth equals success.
Makes you think. Yeah. And of course, there's the image of Jesus washing his disciples' feet.
Right. Hodge sees that as a powerful example of servant leadership.
Yeah.
A reminder that true greatness comes from humility and service, not from hoarding wealth or power. He's reminding us that Jesus lived out a radically different approach to wealth and power. So Hodge is using these stories to paint a different picture of what it means to live a good life, one that prioritizes generosity, service, and a deep concern for the well-being of others.
That's a great way to put it. And he takes it even further by challenging some common misinterpretations of key passages.
You mean like the verses people use to justify wealth inequality?
Yeah, exactly. Like, the poor you will always have with you.
Yeah, that one.
Hodge argues that these passages are often taken out of context. He digs into the historical context and shows how they were actually a call to action, a reminder that we are responsible for caring for the vulnerable.
So it's not about accepting poverty as inevitable.
No.
It's about recognizing our responsibility to alleviate it.
Exactly. And that leads us to one of the most fascinating parts of Hodge's book, his exploration of the early church.
Yeah, those early Christians were pretty radical when it came to sharing resources.
They were. Hodge paints this captivating picture of their incredible generosity, sharing everything, caring for each other. No one in their community was left in need. It was a remarkable example of living out Jesus's teachings on love and community.
And that brings us to a key figure in Hodge's life and work, Kent Hodge himself.
You're right. You can't separate Hodge's life from his work. He's the president of Christian Faith Ministries. It's an organization working to alleviate poverty in northern Nigeria.
Okay. Right.
He works alongside individuals like Reverend Shedema Paul and Dr. Gabriel Iso, serving some of the poorest communities in the world.
Inspiring to see him putting these biblical principles into action.
Absolutely. And let's not forget Ruth Hodge, his wife. She's actively involved in running Christian Faith Ministries nearby, working tirelessly.
It's a powerful example of a couple dedicated to living out their faith.
Absolutely. And their commitment shines through in Kent's writing. It's not just theory for him. It's lived experience, a way of life.
Makes you wonder if the early church's radical generosity is something we can actually strive for in our modern world.
That's the question Hodge wants us to grapple with. And it's a question we'll explore further as we continue our deep dive into biblical economics.
So it's amazing, right? This model of radical sharing. It almost seems utopian, but Hodge presents it as a real lived experience. It makes you wonder, was it truly sustainable? I mean, in the long run.
That's a good question. And Hodge acknowledges that, yes, the early church did face persecution, but he says it wasn't solely because they were giving away their possessions.
Oh, so there was more to it than just that economic generosity.
Exactly. See, the Roman Empire, their whole economy relied heavily on exploitation, slavery, and that very rigid social hierarchy.
Yeah.
But those early Christians, by sharing their resources and, you know, welcoming everyone, they were challenging the very foundation of that system.
That's fascinating. It's like their generosity was a form of nonviolent resistance, like saying, we don't need your system. We're building something different.
Exactly. And Hodge connects this back to the Exodus story.
Okay.
Remember, freeing the Israelites wasn't just about escaping physical slavery. It was about rejecting any system that dehumanizes and exploits people.
So this idea of challenging unjust economic systems, it's a consistent thread throughout the Bible.
Absolutely. And Hodge emphasizes that this call to action, it's not just for individuals. It's about transforming whole societies.
That's big. Okay, so we've got this theme of challenging injustice, but how does Hodge translate that into practical terms? When it comes to economics, I mean, does he offer a specific model, like a set of rules to follow?
Not exactly. He says biblical economics isn't about creating a perfect system or, like you said, a rigid set of rules.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about cultivating certain values, attitudes.
So less about what we do, more about why we do it.
Precisely. Hodge emphasizes recognizing the inherent dignity of every person,
regardless of their economic status.
Exactly. And that leads to a different way of approaching wealth. It's not about hoarding or accumulating for yourself, but using your resources to serve others, to create a more just and equitable world.
It all comes back to this idea of enough, doesn't it?
Right.
Recognizing that we have enough to share, enough to care for those who need it.
You're getting at one of Hodge's central points.
Mm-hmm.
He challenges this idea of scarcity that we're constantly bombarded with.
Right.
He says it's often manufactured just to justify greed and exploitation.
So it's not that there aren't enough resources to go around.
Right.
But we're just not sharing them fairly.
Exactly. And he links this back to the concept of Sabbath.
Sabbath.
It's not just about taking a day off work. It's about pushing back against that constant drive for more, more, more.
So Sabbath becomes a way of resisting consumerism. All that drives so much of our economic activity.
Precisely. Stepping outside of those systems, recalibrating our values, recognizing that true wealth, it's found in relationships, community, living in harmony with creation.
It's also thought-provoking, but honestly, it can feel a bit overwhelming. Does Hodge give us any, like, guidance on how we can actually put these principles into practice?
Well, he doesn't offer a step-by-step guide, but he does share some practical examples from the Bible and his own experiences with Christian faith ministries, for instance.
So finding inspiration, direction from those stories and teachings.
Exactly. He talks about cultivating generosity in our own lives, supporting organizations, fighting poverty, and advocating for policies that promote justice and equality.
So taking these principles and, like, integrating them into our own context.
Right. Hodge reminds us that biblical economics isn't a one-size-fits-all solution.
Yeah.
It's a set of values, a way of seeing the world that we can apply to our unique situations.
It's like a lens, then, through which we can view our economic choices, asking ourselves, am I using my resources in a way that honors God and serves my neighbor?
You got it. And that leads us to one of the most powerful and maybe often overlooked sections of Hodge's book, Pentecost.
Pentecost. Okay, now I'm curious. How does he tie that into all of this?
Well, Hodge says Pentecost wasn't just a spiritual event. Huh. It was a radical act of inclusion and unity.
So it's about more than just speaking in tongues.
Much more. Hodge emphasizes the gift of tongues as a symbol, breaking down barriers between people of different nations, languages.
So kind of foreshadowing the unity that the early church would embody.
Exactly. And he connects this back to the economic unity we see in the early church. They didn't just welcome people from different backgrounds. They shared everything they had.
So Pentecost, it's like it laid the groundwork for this radical ethic of sharing and care that Hodge highlights throughout the book.
Exactly. And he connects it back to his work with Christian faith ministries in northern Nigeria.
Okay.
He sees their efforts to overcome poverty, build community, as a direct continuation of that Pentecostal spirit.
Amazing how these ancient principles are still relevant today, inspiring people like Hodge to make a real difference.
And that's what makes Hodge's work so compelling. He doesn't just present these ideas as, you know, abstract concepts.
Yeah.
He shows how they can be lived out in real, tangible ways.
It's definitely challenging, but also incredibly hopeful.
Yeah.
But before we get too far ahead, let's take a step back. Look at everything we've covered. We've explored Hodge's unique take on creation, Sabbath, the Jubilee year, the Exodus story, even Jesus' teachings.
Mm.
What stands out to you as the most significant takeaway from all of this?
I think it comes down to this. Biblical economics, it's not about creating a perfect system or following a rigid set of rules.
Yeah.
It's about cultivating a certain posture towards wealth, poverty, and our responsibility to care for those in need.
So a heart transformation, more than an economic revolution.
Exactly. Hodge challenges us to embrace abundance, generosity, and that deep sense of responsibility for the well-being of others.
Sounds like a pretty radical way to live.
It is. But it's also incredibly hopeful. Hodge reminds us, when we align our lives with these biblical principles, we can be agents of transformation, bring healing and justice to our communities, to the world.
It's really been quite a journey, this deep dive into biblical economics.
Yes.
We've covered so much, you know, from creation to the early church and even Pentecost.
Yeah.
It's remarkable how Hodge brings all these different threads together into one, you know, cohesive way of thinking.
He does, yeah. Hodge has this gift for making these ancient principles relevant to us today. Mm-hmm. He doesn't just present them as, you know, abstract ideas.
Yeah.
He offers a real framework for how we can understand our relationship with wealth, with poverty, and with each other, really.
I think what struck me most was how he challenges our assumptions about scarcity.
Mm.
In a world where we're constantly told there's not enough to go around, Hodge presents this radical idea of abundance, that God has provided enough for everyone.
It is a core principle,
yeah.
It's not about accepting poverty as inevitable, but challenging the systems, the structures that perpetuate inequality, that prevent people from accessing what they need,
to thrive.
And he supports that challenge with, you know, concrete examples, not just from the Bible, but from his own life, his work.
Absolutely. His work with Christian Faith Ministries, working alongside people like Reverend Shedema Paul and Dr. Gabriel Iso, it's a real testament to his commitment, putting these principles into action, you know, bringing change to communities in northern Nigeria, empowering people to break free from poverty.
And let's not forget the support of his wife, Ruth Hodge, right there beside him, playing such a crucial role.
They're a remarkable team, showing us that living out these principles isn't just about, you know, some theoretical ideal. It's about getting involved, doing the hard work to make a difference.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into biblical economics, what would you say is the most important message? What's Hodge leaving us with?
I think it boils down to this sense of responsibility. We all have a part to play in creating a more just and equitable world. Hodge reminds us that we're not just passive observers. We're called to be agents of change, using our resources, our voices, our actions to challenge injustice, to create systems that reflect God's abundance and his care for all people.
That's a powerful challenge, one that really resonates with me. This deep dive, it's definitely sparked a lot of reflection for me, and I'm sure for our listeners too. If the early church's radical generosity was a sign of the Holy Spirit, what would it look like for us to embrace that same ethic of sharing, of caring in our own communities today?
It's a question worth thinking about. Hodge's book has given us a framework, these principles to guide us. But the real work starts when we take them and apply them to our own lives, to our own communities.
Perhaps this deep dive has raised more questions than answers. But that's what makes it so engaging, right? We encourage you to keep exploring these concepts in Biblical Economics by Ken Hodge. It's a journey that might just transform your understanding of wealth, of poverty, and your role in building a more just, compassionate world.
It's a journey worth taking, absolutely.
Until next time, fellow deep divers, keep seeking, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.